very much. I wanted to talk primarily about the question of June 15th, 2000 and the so-called Queen's Park riot, and to talk about some of the issues that flow from that situation. But before I do, I wanted to stress that that what happened then and some of the ramifications that have flown from flowed out of it are really only part of a much broader question of an attempt to proceed with a socially regressive political agenda and to stifle and to silence all those who would stand up and try and resist it, all those who would try and oppose it. And so while I'm going to talk about June 15th itself, I want it to be remembered that I'm certainly not in any way trying to point to this as anything other than an integral part of resistance and the counterattack of those in authority. There's going to begin on January the 13th a jury trial against three of us. And it's going to be something that I think in a certain sense is rather important and even historic in terms of the the balance of forces between those who would proceed with this agenda and those who would those who would oppose it. It isn't that the three of us that face this particular jury trial are the only people that have faced consequences because of June 15th. After the event, they charged about 45 people, some of them with very serious criminal charges. People who were homeless and who were arrested were incredibly vulnerable and found it very, very difficult to get out of jail. James Semple, a young homeless man who has always been on the front lines of our struggles, actually spent 7 months in the Don jail before he was able to make bail and get out of and get out of jail. So there are also other people that the Crown is proceeding by indictment against. Just a few short weeks ago, at one of the trials, the police arrested an Iranian woman and laid 19 different charges against her, and will be proceeding also by indictment. So she faces the potential of a jury trial and very, very serious consequences. But at the same time, there is something that's particularly different and particularly significant about the jury trial that the three of us are facing, and it's basically this, is that in a way that hasn't happened, I think, for a very long time, they're looking to actually use the power of the system of prosecution in a selective way to try to demonize and criminalize an organization and target people they deem to be leaders. Gaetan Heroux and Stefan Palipa, who are charged along with me, face the charge of participating in a riot. Now, there is nothing that the Crown is presenting that would suggest that they played any particular role on the events that day that would lead to their being charged where others weren't. There were maybe 1,500 people present that day. But the Crown has determined that they are leaders of the organization, and as such, they have been singled out for that particular charge, which faces, which could lead to 2 years in prison if they're convicted. And in my case, they've laid two charges: counselling to participate in a riot and counselling to assault police. And this is based entirely on a speech that I gave, in which I said that the delegation of homeless people who were calling for the right to address the legislature had been refused entry, that we were going to go up and assist the delegation in obtaining entry, and we were going to insist on their right to speak. And on the basis of that, it is alleged by the Crown that the three of us organized what they've referred to as a planned riot. Now, that's something that has very, very serious implications. Just last week, as a matter of fact, Sean Brandt, a man who actually lives on the Tiandanaga Mohawk territory close to here, was in court facing charges relating from an eviction that we carried out of James Flaherty at his office last summer. And the Crown, in closing arguments, suggested that while indeed there was no evidence that Sean had participated in any particular action, had picked up any furniture, had done anything at all, he had made a speech at the beginning of the event in which he had talked about the plight of native people on the streets of Toronto and other related issues. And on the basis of that, that he must be considered a leader and he must be responsible for everything that took place that day, regardless of the fact that there was no evidence that he personally participated in any way. So you get my drift. You get exactly the kind of direction that we're moving in. Now, this is not even-handed justice. This is simply a vindictive and selective way of trying to intimidate and decapitate organizations that stand up and try to oppose what is going on. So those are, I think are the things that we're facing. And I'd like to, in reviewing the whole situation, I'd like to essentially make 4 points tonight. The first is that when we go to trial in January on the charge, on these various charges, we are not actually guilty of the planned riot that they talk about. Not guilty under their laws. And we will be able to mount, I think, a very credible and a very effective legal defense on that basis. What took place on that particular day was that we unquestionably went to Queen's Park to organize a militant demonstration. We will not in any way seek to conceal that. We were not interested in going to Queen's Park and making 37 speeches on the grass about the injustices of homelessness and then leaving. What we wanted to do was something a little different. We wanted to demand of the Tories that they receive a delegation of homeless people. If you remember how politics used to be in this province prior to 1995, the way the game was usually played was that people with grievances came to the legislature and demanded things, and in one way or another, they were given some sort of hearing, some sort of consideration. But one of the things about the Common Sense Revolution, apart from its grossly regressive character, was that there was a change in terms of how dissent and protest and disagreement was dealt with. And it was essentially to ride roughshod over opposition, to ignore it, and if it couldn't be ignored, to deal with it entirely as a police matter, as in Ipawash, where the call was, get the Indians out of the park. But you don't actually, in terms of the Common Sense Revolution, deal with people's concerns. And we felt that to force this government to show a mark of respect to homeless people, who they consider despised collateral damage in their war against the population of the province, would be enormously important. And so we went there knowing that in all probability we would be blocked at the entry. But we wanted to create a situation where a serious enough gathering of people could convince them that politically it was necessary to negotiate, to bring people in, as we had achieved on Parliament Hill a number of months before. So that was essentially the plan that we had. Now, we knew we would be blocked, and we knew we would face a police force that would be not exactly diplomatic in how it conducted itself. But we were fairly ready for that. But what we didn't anticipate, I must confess, is, first of all, the absolute intransigence of the government, but secondly, how they would, in turning the matter over to the police, use tactics that were beyond the bounds. When we marched up to those barricades, they conveniently collapsed. We then found that as people moved forward, they rapidly responded with a procedure that was so reckless and so over the top in terms of its behavior that it was breathtaking. They rode horses into the crowd and they organized repeated baton charges by the riot police, what they refer to in their technical jargon as punch-outs, repeated punch-outs into the crowd. And they actually moved to clear the grounds of the legislature. Now, in doing that, there is no question that they precipitated a confrontation. But if there was a riot that day, in our estimation, and it will be our submission in court, it was a police riot. And we'll be ready to make that argument. And the second point I need to make, and we'll have to fight to make this point in court, but we'll certainly make it on the streets as well, is that we don't want to lose sight of what the issues are in this whole matter. We don't want to just be forced into a situation of having to get into the small change of who did what on the steps of Queen's Park that day. One of the things we want to drive home to people is that, in fact, if we're talking about the criminals, The real criminals weren't out on the lawn that day. The real criminals were inside, inside the legislative chambers. The people who were really responsible for the misery in this province. And I don't really mean that as a turn of phrase or as a piece of rhetoric. When we marched on the legislature that day, we were aware that in the downtown area of Toronto, and the year was less than half over, 26 homeless people had perished that we could account for. And 15 of those had been active in the work of our coalition. Subsequently, the situation has become even more extreme. I was just reading in the Toronto Star last weekend that since the welfare cut in 1995, the budgets for the children's aid societies have doubled, and the number of children forced into foster care has gone up by 63% in the province of Ontario. Now, if that isn't criminal behaviour, I don't know what is. And if there was any justice, those are the people who would be facing trial in January. In fact, they would already be locked away. When last year I found myself in Whitby Jail for also the Flaherty action, one of the jail guards in there said to me, I remember it quite distinctly, I was due to have my bail hearing, which actually I was unsuccessful in getting out of jail at that point. The justice of the peace said that I was a danger to the public, and as such I was returned to the jail for another period of time. But as I was getting ready, and in Durham they don't just handcuff you, they shackle you to go to court. So as this man was putting my shackles on, he said it was sort of interesting. He said to me, "It's funny, you know," he said, "I'm shackling you to go to your bail hearing today, but at exactly the same time, the Premier is getting into a limousine to go and give testimony at the Walkerton inquiry. And there's two differences. You're going in a wagon with shackles on. He's going in a limousine. You threw furniture out of somebody's office, but he killed seven people." And I thought, again, that was a very, very telling and correct point. And jail guards are not generally noted to be the most extremist in their outlook politically. But I thought that was a very telling and a very accurate point. And I thought I owed it to him to tell that story. The third point I'd like to make is that what we're dealing with here is indeed the criminalisation of resistance and the criminalisation of dissent. So that you do have a situation where, as I said a moment ago, things have changed very dramatically. There's no interest any longer in finding out what people's grievances are, dealing with those grievances, there being any give and take. Those who dissent, those who resist, are dealt with today as a police matter. That is entirely to be laid at the door of the Conservative government in Ontario. It's more pervasive than that. But it's certainly what we've been dealing with over the last few years, and certainly what we were dealing with on June 15th, 2000. It would be really incredible if we could actually find out the dollars and cents that have gone into the whole operation around June 15th. The police mobilization, the subsequent arrests, all the resources that they put into it. But I can confidently say that if we could have 1% of that amount, then OCAP's budget would mushroom dramatically, because the amounts that they have expended are absolutely incredible. There are still, 3 years later, detectives still seconded to the investigation, still working on the case. The Crown Attorney's Office in Toronto went all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada to get media footage that turned over to them and to enforce their subpoenas. After the event was over, Fantino, who embarrassingly had been away in Italy at the time, the chief of police in Toronto, he came back and he announced that a task force was going to be established that would have any and all resources. And one comparison that struck me as quite incredible was, if you compare that to the situation in BC, where all those women from Vancouver were taken and murdered, and how long it took the relatives and friends and survivors of that situation to get that issue taken in any way seriously. If you compare that to when some homeless people and their supporters went to Queen's Park, the expenditure of resources, it says a lot about who is served and who is protected in this society. So we are dealing, I think, with we're dealing, I think, with an incredible process of trying to criminalize and trying to stifle dissent. And it doesn't just find its expression in terms of what happened at Queen's Park, as came up in the introduction from Catherine. It is very alive and very evident right here in Belleville in terms of the harassment that takes place of the tenant action group, and one could talk about many, many different situations. But my fourth and final point that I would like to make is that despite that, despite all those attacks, in no way is the movement in general, and OCAP in particular, in any danger of being crushed and being silenced. We are not intimidated. In fact, after June 15th, a particular researcher from one of the universities called through to the police and was put through to the operational commander of that day, Superintendent Aidan Mahar. And Mahar told him that the OCAP problem was now over, that bail conditions had been imposed upon us, there was nothing to worry about, it was all under control, they wouldn't be hearing from us again. I think it's fair to say that it's a matter of record that Mahar was, on that occasion, as on many other occasions, completely and utterly wrong in his estimation. In fact, June 15th didn't silence us. It led to, in fact, a growth of our organization and a growth of the support. And, you know, just in the last short while, we have been able to organize the Pope Squad in Toronto to take over a building, to hold it for a period of 3 months, and to raise a banner of resistance that has been enormously important. So there isn't any question that we're going to be intimidated. As we move towards the trial, already we see incredible amounts of support coming forward. We got a call from the Chicago Coalition for Public Housing saying that when the trial begins, people in Chicago want to come up on buses to support it. We got an email from the West Cape Anti-Eviction Campaign in South Africa saying that they have petitions that they're taking around the townships, that they're going to send us a list of people in the townships who are signing to show support at the time of the trial. Just a little while ago, a woman from Halifax, Nova Scotia, sent us a check for $1,500, saying that she hoped we could use that in our struggles because she was so inspired. And she added a note at the bottom saying that she hoped that we would use this wisely because it constituted most of her savings. I mean, everywhere, in every way, we're seeing support coming in from people. And I have no doubt that at the end of the day, we're going to mobilize, not just in the courtroom, but generally, we're going to mobilize a defense that's going to be enormously important. Now, we don't have control over their legal system, and I can't dispute the possibility that there may be, at the end of the day, convictions of the people that have been charged. That's one possibility, although I think we have a strong legal defense. But what we want to achieve more than anything is a situation where it is clear to them that the movement itself is not intimidated, that it's continuing to move forward. At the end of the day, I want them to actually say to themselves, we made a big mistake going down this road by raising the stakes in this degree, because it's obvious that what we have done is not crushed the movement. We have, in fact, caused it to grow. And I think that's true. But what is absolutely necessary is that we continue to move forward. We continue to resist. When we must defend ourselves in court, we do. But we not become so absorbed with those challenges that we become totally diverted. We have to continue to build this movement because, in the end, what we are confronting is an inhuman agenda. We have the right to resist it. And whether we say that on the streets or whether we say it in the courtrooms, we must continue to say it. And we have to go on fighting to win. Thank you very much.